I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Hillary Clinton may have run for president in 2008, and Michelle Bachmann tried to cinch the nomination this year in the GOP primaries. But the question remains, why aren't there more women in politics? One summer camp is trying to change this by priming today's teenage girls for tomorrow's political leadership. This hour, we'll talk about Madam President, a summer camp for the future female leaders in government, and we'll try to determine what else it will take to get more women in office. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Today, a young girl knows she can be a doctor, a businesswoman, or even a lawyer, but does she know that she can be a senator or even president of this country? You know, she may not. Today, just 17 of the 100 members of the U.S. Senate are women, and just 73 of 435 members of the House. Governors, only 6 of 50. In just a few weeks in town, a camp for girls 10 to 14 takes place. Its title, Madam President, and its aim is to open up this idea that girls can grow up to be lawyers or doctors or, yes, even presidents. Three guests today. Dr. Julia Warm is director of the UMKC Civic Engagement Program and former city manager of Reno, Nevada. She's the lead staff member for the Madam President camp at UMKC that takes place beginning June 25. Julie, nice to have you. Good morning.
Thanks so much for having us.
Missouri State Representative Gail Beatty is here. She's a Kansas City Democrat. Gail, nice to have you.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Kathy Dusenberry, who's a member of the Platte County Commission. Kathy, good morning to you, too.
Thank you for having me.
And I should point out that Madam President is a project of the Civic Engagement Program at the UMKC Institute for Human Development. The camp is made possible through funding from the Women in Politics Foundation. Well, Julie, to what extent do girls grow up today thinking that becoming president of this country or even a senator might be just out of the question?
Well, it depends upon what age you're talking about. If you're talking about a younger girl, they see themselves as with unlimited horizon. They are they're on top of it. They're aggressive. They believe that they're going to be very active.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is much different. And so the purpose of Madam President is to strengthen and change whatever's happening during that adolescence to mid-adolescence period.
So your point is that something changes once girls hit teenagedom, that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, if I can talk about the research for a minute. There was a study done of 14-year-old girls and boys where they asked them, how politically active do you intend to be as an adult? And so what they said, and a whole variety of activities, everything from voting to writing to the letter to the editor to boycotting, painting slogans, those
yeah.
kinds of things.
Yeah.
The girls intended to be much more active. The boys, less so. And then as an adult, of course, we know the statistics. Well, you pointed out the statistics that girls just disappear from the scene.
And that's because why?
Well, nobody knows. Nobody knows exactly. Does it happen at the age of 17? Does it happen at the age of 22? It happens. Now, there are three theories. There's the theory that because of socialization, because of norms and expectations around what a woman can do or not do, the pressures about raising children. There's a theory that they just don't have the exposure to political careers and volunteer opportunities that give them the opportunities to learn those key political skills,
yeah.
such as public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third theory is that's the role of gatekeepers. And if someone is asked, they are four times more likely to consider themselves qualified. And so the people who ask don't ask women.
Hmm. Well, then the question arises, your Madam President camp is for girls 10 to 14. Why not have the camp for girls when they're 24 to 28?
Because at some, at, by that time, it's happened. What's mm-hmm. ever happened has happened. And so this is a camp to strengthen the foundation, to give them the cohort group.
The foundation,
To get them through whatever happens during those vulnerable adolescent mm-hmm. years.
Representative Beatty, what's your theory for why girls, young women, tend to drop off the radar when it comes to having an interest in pursuing a career in politics as they get a little bit older out of teenagedom there?
I think part of it is lack of exposure. While that wasn't necessarily for me, I was very much in politics at a very young age, working on campaigns and things like that. But if you had asked me, would I be in this position now, I never dreamed that this is where I would be. And I think part of it, I was not real confident. I didn't like public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think rather than face that fear and go after it, a lot of times we shy away from those things that we don't understand or that we're fearful of.
Yeah. You know, Kathy, you were just we're laughing there. Public speaking, is that a dividing moment for a lot of young women in terms of does that chase them away from having an interest in pursuing politics?
Well, when you're center stage, I think that's a difficult place to put yourself into. And I've always felt that running for office, it's such – you're really risking a lot, and you're risking your family when you do that.
And
it,
in what
it
sense?
Really takes – well, because you're so exposed. Everything that you do, everything your family does is under a microscope. And so it is something that is – it's a difficult decision for either sex to decide to step into the arena.
Mm-hmm. And leaving a family behind, going to Jefferson City every week for 4 or 5 days, that can be pretty tough.
I would
on a
say
family.
That is a big commitment to yeah. For somebody to do.
Yeah. Hey, how do you handle that, Gail, as you go to Jefferson City every week? How tough is it for you?
Well, one side, I don't have children.
Mm-hmm.
But my husband is extremely supportive of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the support of your family is crucial to being gone 4.5 months, 4 days out of the week.
Yeah. You said you were involved as a younger volunteer on different campaigns. Why did you get involved to begin with?
I was a daddy's girl. So where daddy went, I went. And my father was active in Freedom, Inc. and worked a number of campaigns. I actually changed my major in college to political science.
Mm-hmm.
I served as committee woman a couple of times. I did an internship with Alan Wheat,
mm-hmm.
which was crucial to changing.
A former congressman here right. in Kansas City. Yeah.
That was crucial to my actually looking at politics as a possible career.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, someone came and asked me to run. And I ran in 1999. I was unsuccessful. And then I was asked again in 2010.
For state rep, you ran in 99?
Yes, same position, 43rd district.
Yeah. Well, and how confident or how unconfident were you back in 99 that you could actually make a run for a job like state representative?
I don't think I had very much confidence at all. And probably that was what caused it to end the way it did. Again, kind of like what Kathy said, you're out there. You're under a microscope, and that's a scary thing, especially when you're not used to speaking in public, when you're used to going about your day-to-day life, and all of a sudden your life is the public. It's a very difficult thing to handle.
And you think, is it a more difficult thing to handle for women than it is for men?
I think women are often more criticized, particularly if they have children. The thought of leaving their families, it's that what I call an old-fashioned belief,
mm-hmm.
that women have to stay home. But I think women should be able to have careers as well.
Yeah.
Can I jump in here
yeah,
for a second?
Yeah, Julie, go ahead.
You know, there's some research to support that. I feel like a broken record about the research. But anyway, when a man considers an opportunity, whether or not it's a job promotion or the chance to run for office, they usually – compare themselves against other men.
Mm-hmm.
They say, well, if he can do it, if Joe can do it, I'm just as smart as he is. I can certainly do it. But when a woman considers these opportunities, she compares herself against herself. And so it's much harder to reach an acceptable bar when the only one you're comparing yourself to is yourself.
And why do you think that happens?
Again, is it that socialization? Mm-hmm. Who knows what it is? But the point that Gail said, and that I happen to know is true of Kathy as well, they were asked. Mm-hmm. And that is the crucial difference, is that they had that external validation that said, you can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's so important.
Hey, Kathy, tell us about your own story. When did you decide to run for public office the first time, and what kind of experience was it for you?
Well, Parkville was growing, and we had recently moved into the city of Parkville, and there was going to be a new ward, a new district. And so I spoke up at a homeowners association meeting, and...
Fatal mistake.
I was cornered afterwards and was asked to run for this new position.
Mm-hmm.
It has worked well. It has worked with my family, but I've always joked that I was, you know, probably the only person that had to cook dinner before I attended the alderman meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a good. I'm glad that I took the opportunity to do it. I've learned so much, and it's been great to serve my area.
Because you went from being representing a ward to being mayor of Parkville to now being a Platte County commissioner.
Right. I've done the local move. I started out as an alderman and did that for 7 years. Then I was mayor for 2 terms. And now I'm up for reelection for my 2nd term.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of ride has it been for you?
It's been phenomenal. I have really enjoyed it because of the things that you can do locally. I mean, going to the grocery store is not just going to the grocery store. I meet my neighbors there. We talk about issues. I mean, my kids don't even like to ride with me to the grocery store because they know it's going to take me an extra hour to get through the aisles.
Uh-huh.
But that's part of being in politics, and you've got to love it. You've got to feel like you're serving a purpose, that you're working and listening to what people are asking for.
You know, but it still sounds to me, Julie, like as we're talking here in the year 2012, we're still describing a situation where running for public office as a woman is a different experience, a different set of challenges than it is a man running for public office.
I'd say that's true. It's strictly a man's world out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the camp is organized to, if you will, do a treatment for whatever is happening, to build a strong foundation. We are going to mentor. We're going to build a cohort group to get them through these fragile years. I don't know if we can change the gatekeepers, though I intend to be much more aggressive about asking women and these girls mm-hmm. to consider civic engagement or public life.
Now, you mentioned mentors a second ago. What do you mean by giving these girls mentors as they walk through their teenage years? What's that about?
We don't have any shortages of women wanting to support girls. People our age, and yeah, your studio audience can't see this, but we're all women of a certain age. We get it. We've been there. And so the chance to pay back and help these girls navigate these waters would be a tremendous gift for us.
And so there's a mentoring program that's part of the Madam President camp.
Yeah. But, well, we'd have to work with the parents and guardians as well, but each girl would be matched with a mentor that makes sense for that family.
Where did the idea for Madam President, where did the idea for the camp come from?
Well, our funders, the WIP Foundation, Women in Politics, this is a group of women that have come together in a nonpartisan way to support women in politics.
And these camps are happening just in Kansas City or all over the country?
It's just a Kansas City thing.
Really?
Yeah.
And this is the first time we've done it.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
Have these camps occurred elsewhere?
Oh, you know, I have. My Google search pointed out one in Arizona several years ago. I don't think it's active. I think there's something sort of like this in Georgia. Again, I don't think it's active, and I don't think it's taken it the way and the formation that we've done it, partnering with a university with an urban mission.
Yeah. Well, let's get our listeners involved here. Do you believe the U.S. will ever have a woman president, at least in our lifetimes? Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address is updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Let's skip ahead for a moment and talk about this notion I just asked our listeners to chime in on. Is this country ready for a woman president? Kathy, what do you think? Are we ready? Has the time come?
I don't know if the media will allow it.
Really? You're looking at me as a member of the
media.
No,
and I'm a journalist, too. My background is my degree is in journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I just – it goes back to that under the microscope. I think that that women are a little – looked at a little bit harsher.
Tell me about that. In what way?
Well, first off, there's not been the process of building as many potential candidates. And when there is, they probably do not have as much experience as maybe their male counterpart. And that's what needs to change. And I think it'll be a process before we get to a true Madam President.
But you say this, and just a few years ago, we came within a hair's breadth, arguably, of having a woman, Hillary Clinton, become the first woman president of this country.
Yes, but that turned very quickly around, and
it's a long race.
Yes, it is, and it didn't work in her favor. So I just feel that it's going to take some time before there was a lot of scrutiny on her, just like there was on Sarah Palin.
And so you're saying the scrutiny of a woman candidate exceeds the scrutiny given to male candidates, then?
I believe so.
Yeah, and the scrutiny centers on what?
I think knowledge of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And there's such a wide variety of issues that women will be challenged on in knowing. And that's what we talked about earlier, Gail and I, that when you understand an issue, it's more than just passion you have to be in office. You have to really know your issues and understand them so that you can explain them, articulate them to your constituents.
Mm-hmm. And it's complicated stuff a lot of times.
Yeah, it's never black and white.
And you're saying the level of scrutiny given to a woman candidate for the presidency exceeds the scrutiny given to a male candidate.
It's just an opinion. It's just how I feel.
Yeah.
I will say, though, that I never read a single article about Barack Obama's hair or John McCain's hair.
Or their wardrobe.
And you still read some about Hillary Clinton's.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And Gail, you're nodding.
She wore plastic clips in her hair. I mean, you know.
You're nodding your head, Gail.
Absolutely. I think it goes even beyond the knowledge that they have.
Mm-hmm.
It's how do they look? How do they dress? You know, is she pretty? Is she thin? Does she fit that model? And I think we judge women on that basis, but we don't judge men on that basis.
That's interesting. Again, let's get our listeners involved here. 816-235-2888. Is this country ready for a woman president or not? Our email address, update@kcur.org. Or again, go to KCUR's Facebook page. Kathy from Kansas City, Kansas. Is this country ready, Kathy, or not?
Oh, honey, we've been ready. I love you, Steve, but I hate that question, but I always have. I'm going to try and make a few points real quickly. We're ready, and we have been ready, because we're ready for a capable person to be in office. And I do believe we have one right now. I like Barack Obama. So it's just almost, I don't even understand that question. Do you know what I mean? I'm not trying to be rude, but yeah,
mm-hmm.
And so, yes, we are ready. We're past ready. And it will happen. I'm 55, and it will happen in my lifetime.
Kathy, it will happen in your lifetime or it will not?
Oh, yeah, it will. Absolutely, mm-hmm. It will. And another thing is that I do remember. They talk about Obama's hair being grayer. They talk about his girl-laid mama jeans. They talk about him being, why is he wearing that? You know, he's just too relaxed. He's too cool. So he gets, like we all know, he gets plenty of criticism. But, yes, it's ridiculous, and it is way more far-reached when it's one of us, a woman. They want to talk about how high our heels are and how, you know, if we have a slit in our skirt. And it's frustrating, but someone is going to be able to overcome that and just go ahead. If Barack Obama, with all the hate for an African-American president can be elected, a woman can be elected.
Kathy, let me get you to answer this, and let me get our other callers to chime in here as well. Does a candidate for president need to look a certain way, as Gail Beatty was just pointing out? What's your sense of that? Again, our number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, update@kcur.org. What do you think, Kathy?
As you were speaking, I had to think about that, and if I'm going to be honest, yes. Apparently, yeah, even for me, because I'm going to tell you, I was all over, frumpy Newt Gingrich. And so we're all going to have our opinions, and they're all going to be different, though. I mean, Barack Obama does not look like 50, maybe 48% of this America thinks a president should look. But he is president. And so that's what I'm, I guess what I'm saying is, no matter what people think and say, it can be done.
But and you think a woman has to look a certain way too, Kathy?
I think so. And I don't know what is presidential. I don't want, you know, Sarah Palin didn't get far and she's gorgeous. So I don't even know how, if I can answer that question. I'm going to try to be way less judgmental myself because you just made me think about it.
Okay. Kathy, thank you for the phone call.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You know, it's certainly not for a lack of women voters. The Center for American Women in Politics at Rutgers University, which is just a great resource on issues involving women in politics, points out that the number of female voters has exceeded the number of male voters in every presidential election since 1964. Are you surprised by that, Julie?
No. In fact, can I go back to your other question about being, are we ready for a woman's president?
Yeah.
Is that I think that that focus is not what at least I'm focusing on and what the Met and President's camp is focusing on. Where the problem is that women don't file for office in the same proportion as men.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it's what I'm ready for is to see more women on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
Is that when women don't file, women can't be elected. And so that's where the real drop-off is.
There's still a vast disparity out there.
Women won't, or women have a tough time deciding to put themselves out there to run for office.
Mm-hmm.
And when we start getting parity at the ballot, then we'll start seeing stronger candidates make their way up through the system.
Gail, do you see that too? When you talk to your friends and encouraging other women to run, do you get resistance, a little blowback, women saying, no, I can't do that?
That's true. I think we sometimes convince ourselves this isn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, having to go back to the scrutiny of being in political office, knowing that you can't run to the grocery store wearing your junk clothes anymore, you know, you always have to be prepared to meet the public.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody doesn't want to be out there. And particularly if you're in local politics, it's even more difficult because in Jeff City, we tend to kind of be in a little bit of a vacuum.
Mm-hmm.
People don't necessarily always even understand what goes on in Jeff City. But when you are at home and your city council and those things, you are out front, front and center all the time. And that's very difficult for women.
Yeah. Back to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888. Let's go to Dick from Overland Park. Dick, welcome to the show.
How are you?
Well, thanks, Dick.
My comment was I grew up in Kansas, and we have kind of a, I think, maybe a unique history of lady electeds.
That's right.
I think at one time Sheila Fromm and Nancy Kassebaum were our two senators, and Joan Finney and Myers were my other two statewide electeds. And I'm not sure that any other state in the country has had that experience.
Now, I think you're referring to the time when in the early 90s, Governor was Joan Finney. Jan Myers was a member of Congress from the 3rd District. And Nancy Kassebaum was a statewide elected U.S. senator. I think we were only like the third state in the country in our history to have a situation like that, Dick.
Right. And then Sheila Fromm got appointed as senator for a short period of time in there as well.
In 1996, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
When Bob Dole stepped down to run for president full time. Yeah.
Right. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't. There's no one spot or one reason, one spot I can point to explain why I think that's happened in Kansas. But I think it has a lot to do with just the tradition of the state, plus women coming up through the pipeline. Nancy Kassebaum was a school board member.
That's right.
When she ran. She wasn't spending years and years working the traditional channels like a lot of folks do, male and female.
She had a great last name, Dick. It helped a lot.
Well, Kassebaum, yeah, but the Landon didn't hurt.
Right. That's what I meant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, thank you for the phone call, Dick.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I was going to point out, you know, Kansas does have a pretty good reputation nationally, and yet even today it ranks just 16th nationally when it comes to the proportion of women in the legislature. 12 of the 40 members of the state Senate are women these days, just 33 of 125 in the House. You know, Kansas does have a good reputation when it comes to electing women, but yet those numbers don't blow you out the door, do they, Kathy?
No, and it seems to go in waves.
Yes.
When I was mayor of Parkville and we met, Julie put together kind of a focus group of all the elected mayors, and it was really that was, by the way, Julie, that was a wonderful program what you had put together, and we were able to speak with the other women electeds and share stories and bond. And then several of those women retired or were not reelected, and we kind of lost that wave. We lost that momentum. There was a strong momentum there for a while, yeah, of local women mayors.
I just pointed out that Kansas ranked 16th nationally with the proportion of women in the legislature. In Missouri, the state ranks smack dab in the middle, 25th, when it comes to the proportion of women in the General Assembly. Six of 34 state senators in Missouri are women. 41 of 163 state reps are women, just roughly 25%. Gail, that's the world you live in. How much of a difference would it make if there were more women in the state house down in Jeff City?
I think it would make a huge difference.
In what sense?
One, we're starting to see this nationwide attack on women. I think that's a huge deal.
When it comes to reproductive rights and other
absolutely
issues you're talking about. Yeah.
The fact that we are still having to have rallies in regards to equality of pay in 2012 is just amazing to me.
Mm-hmm.
We're just not there yet. So having more women in the legislature, making it a little bit more balanced, I think would be just essential, would be a wonderful idea.
Kathy, do you share that idea? Does it make a difference?
I think so, because we bring a different set of skills.
Mm-hmm. In what sense?
I think we're more the negotiators. I think we're the more of bringing people together. And
building consensus, you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely. Steve, we're consensus builders.
And it seems to me there's a little bit of need for that in our country right now.
Yes, definitely.
On all levels of government, yeah. Back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Denise from Overland Park. Denise, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much for doing this very important program. I'm an attorney, and I do a lot of work with public advocacy training through a national organization called WIP, Women Impacting Public Policy.
Yeah.
And Rutgers is just one of the leaders, but at a program I attended this summer, they had a very interesting presenter that was talking about a survey that went out to women business leaders and male business leaders saying two questions. One, are you qualified for president? And two, would you consider running? And the answers showed that the women, by and large, felt they were qualified but would not run for any number of answers. The men answered opposite, to where they felt they were not qualified but that they would run in a minute. And the consensus was that this is a result of the socialization that girls have. Being president is truly at a young age not something that we envision. So I guess my own experience, and I want to throw this out and listen to the panel, but my own experience has been that for women to truly be considered as a presidential candidate, we've got to make some societal changes. One, really start working with our young women at a very early age to get that vision in their head. And two, not only women getting out and voting, but women becoming very integrally active in the political process, to where we're supporting candidates by our political donations and by our time and our talents. And I think if those two things would happen, it would go light years in changing the landscape. And I will listen to the comments of the panelists.
Yeah, Denise, thank you very much. And Julie Warm, I think she was right down the pike in terms of what your Madam President camp is all about.
She's singing my song.
She's singing your song, yeah. But the notion of even this notion of contributing and being involved in the process, that's so important, right?
Yeah, you know, we were talking about it before we walked in, is that you made the comment that women aren't represented to the extent that men are and donating to campaigns.
Right.
And that's true. Women aren't doing as many political acts in the same proportion as men.
Yeah.
But the other way of looking at that is that women donors aren't supporting men over women. They just aren't supporting anybody with their contributions. And so going back to something I said before is that if a woman files, she has access to the same things that men do,
yeah,
voters and funds, is that they don't file. And so getting them to believe that they can and to think it's important is what's important.
You know, let's take a break on that note. In our second half, we'll talk about this idea that Pat Schroeder talked about in Kansas City a few years ago. Why is it that women don't support other women with their campaign donations nearly to the same extent that men do? We'll talk about that in our second half today as we talk about this whole idea of women in politics. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. If you missed our indie documentary and foreign film review from Friday, you'll find it on all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, we talk with historian Douglas Brinkley about his in-depth biography of Walter Cronkite, who, of course, has very deep roots in Kansas City. Interesting book. It'll be an interesting conversation tomorrow with Douglas Brinkley. Today we're talking about the future of this country when it comes to women politicians. Will we see a woman politician, a woman president in our lifetimes? Our phone number here for your two cents, 816-235-2888. Our email address, UpToDate at kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. Why haven't we seen a woman president yet? Do you expect one soon? Who's it going to be? 816-235-2888. You know, there is this issue when it comes to women candidates that I just mentioned before the break here, women, and it has to do with how enthusiastic and how supportive women themselves are about a woman president. I heard Colorado Congresswoman Pat Schroeder speak in town a number of years ago, and she, of course, ran for president herself back in 88. And she said support from some women was tepid at best, at least when it came to financial support. It wasn't that good at all. What about that, Kathy? Why aren't we seeing more support from women themselves when it comes to donating to women candidates who are actually have the courage to stand up and put themselves out there?
I have that question, too.
I'm
in the season right now of raising funds.
Mm-hmm.
And the checks that are written for my campaign do come from the male, from the husbands, and it's not that I don't have the support of the women in my area. It's just that the decision makers, as far as writing the check, it comes from the men.
Does that bother you? Or confuse you, maybe,
is a better word. Quite honestly, I didn't think about it until I got into this show. So I may start asking my girlfriends to write me a check and see what happens. But at this point, it just the decision makers or the men that is who are writing the checks. I'm having a golf tournament, so maybe that's why I'm getting
that'll more. Help. Yeah. That's the voice of Kathy Dusenberry. She's a member of the Platte County Commission. We're also joined today by Missouri State Representative Gail Beatty and Dr. Julie Warm, who's director of the UMKC Civic Engagement Program. Gail Beatty, have you noticed the same thing?
I have.
What's up with
while
it?
While I do receive some donations from the women, in fact, one of my best friends I grew up with just made a donation to me,
By and large, the majority of my donations tend to come from men. And I think in part that is because women still aren't fully engaged in the political process.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see, when I go to political events, it's still male dominated.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow we need to convince women that they have a voice,
mm-hmm.
and how a donation is actually a way of expressing that voice. And we haven't done a good job of that.
You know, Dr. Julie Warren, when Pat Shorter was here, she said this notion of seeing women advance in greater numbers simply won't happen until women step up to the plate financially and make those donations. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No question about it.
But I agree with that women need to be more engaged in all the levels of civic activity and political activity.
Yeah.
And so that is just one of them. But there are many more that they also need to ramp up.
Okay. Do you expect to see a woman president in your lifetime? 816-235-2888. Let's go to Dick from Kansas City, Missouri. Dick, good morning.
Hey, how you doing, Steve?
Well, thanks, Dick.
Hey, I just wanted to hear your guest comments. I read an article a number of weeks ago, and it talked about how women have the tendency to be more empathetic, and how this could have huge implications on the outcome of wars or even the start of wars, how this could have huge implications as far as economy, equality, things of that nature. And I just wanted to hear your guests' comments on how they think that would affect politics and the world around.
Yeah. Representative Gail Beatty, talk to me about that, about empathy. How important is it, and do you see more of it among women?
I'm not – for those women that – are in the political arena, I wouldn't say that they're more empathetic. In fact, I would say they're probably more aggressive. They're more astute. They are, I'm not sure empathy is a good word for them.
Mm-hmm.
I suggest just tune in and listen to the House floor debate on occasion, particularly when we're dealing with some of the more controversial issues. I just think we need to encourage more women to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
The pool is much smaller.
Mm-hmm.
When we look at women representing 50% of the population, and actually Missouri, we're probably a little more on the high side in terms of the number of representatives we have at the state because we're about 25%. But I noticed there were two or three states that have no women at the federal level at all and
yeah.
have not had any women at the federal level at all.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to figure out how to bring more women to the table.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say that they're necessarily more empathetic. I think you'll find that women that are involved in politics tend to be really more aggressive, more concerned,
mm-hmm.
but not necessarily empathetic.
Kathy, talk to me about empathy. How do you see this?
Well, I think it's more of taking the time to study the whole issue and find out maybe the deeper reasons and cut through some of the minutiae as far as finding out why, as far as why somebody feels that way or why should we take a vote on a certain issue. Research it. Make sure that we understand the issue, and I don't really feel like empathy. I agree with you, Gail. I don't think empathy is the right word. I think that we have like maybe a different sense. We look at it. It's more the we look at things maybe a little bit deeper, a little bit harder,
mm-hmm.
and we look at the effects. I mean, so often things happen in Jeff City, and there's a trickle down that nobody ever looks at in Jeff.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love to have more local people, local politicians move up to Jeff City so that they could understand that trickle down
yeah.
and what happens at the city level, what happens at the county level. And,
you know, when Gail talked a minute ago about the need for more women and recruiting more women into the process, how is that going to happen? Is it simply women reaching out to other women? Is that sort of the most effective way to go about recruiting women to run for office?
I think we need to learn to be more supportive of each other. I've always felt that. I don't feel like women treat each other as well as they should.
Now,
and
that's
it's very competitive.
Yeah.
And
when it, in theory, it should be more supportive. Am I right?
I feel that way. And mm-hmm. I work very hard. I appointed two women to the Board of Aldermen when I was mayor.
In Parkville.
In Parkville, yes.
Mm-hmm. What about this idea, Dr. Julie Warm, about women not being as supportive of other women as they should be?
Well, I think that when you're talking about one other, when you have a central figure and then and another woman comes in, is that they have a tendency to want to distance themselves from the second woman, whether or not that's through conflict or disagreement, because they don't want to be seen as a girls' club.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Again, the research will show that when there becomes a critical mass, especially most of this research is done around state legislatures,
mm-hmm.
but when there becomes a critical mass, then the women will coalesce around, particularly around some issues. But I'll warn you that when you use these labels to apply to broad spectrums of people,
sure.
you know, women,
yeah.
you know, you will always find examples
Fair point.
Of people that don't fit into that model.
Yeah.
But generally speaking.
We're talking about women in politics today and when we're going to see the first woman president. Our number here again, 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Nathan from Leawood. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning. Let me turn down my radio really quickly.
Sure.
I think part of the problem is that America is not in a classical parliamentary system because, like, for example, in 1979 in England, when Margaret Thatcher was the leader of the opposition, there was an election, her side won, and she's suddenly prime minister. That's not going to happen here.
Mm-hmm. You buy that, Kathy?
Margaret Thatcher is an example and a mentor for all of us, and she
mm-hmm.
stood against things that when you saw the movie, I forget what the name of that movie was called, but
yeah,
you know, when
yeah.
the they very vividly showed the trash sitting outside Parliament when there was a strike, and the way she carried herself was so strong, and I think that's when you have when you believe in something,
mm-hmm.
you have to kind of see and let it follow through, and that's. That's one thing that, I mean, she's an example for all of us of somebody that we can mentor, I mean, follow.
Right. Paul from Leavenworth. Paul, you're on the program. Good morning.
Good morning. I've often heard that women control something like 2/3 of the fortunes in this country. And if that is so, why is it that women represent such a small portion of the donations to political campaigns.
Mm-hmm. Paul, thank you. Dr. Warm?
Well, I'm going to guess that 2/3 of the fortune of the country mostly goes to groceries and paying the gas bill. Is that doesn't mean that all the fortunes that or all the money that the women control are discretionary.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my guess. I haven't read anything about that.
And before I forget to point out, I should mention that Madam President Camp runs for a week beginning on June 25th. Scholarships are available. For more information, you can call Dr. Julie Warm at 816-235-5371. And I'll give that number out again later on. Again, 235-5371 if you have an interest in sending your daughter between the ages of 10 and 14 to Madam President Camp beginning the week of June 25th. Jerry from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, Jerry.
I was just observing that, you know, when you see John Boehner cry versus Hillary Clinton cry, the media and the public react differently. I think you talk about empathy of a female versus a male in public office. I think sometimes a woman feels like she has to be stricter or more manly, and maybe that would make her less likely to vote against war, to take action against war because of fear she would look weak or feminine and want to counteract that.
Gail, do you buy Jerry's point? Do women, is there an onus on them to be tougher and act tougher as in terms of being a woman politician?
I'm not sure.
I think that's probably a pressure we put more on ourselves
mm-hmm.
than other people put on us.
But do you feel it sometimes yourself?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you feel like you have to be because it is male dominated.
Mm-hmm. How is it for you navigating the shoals of life in Jefferson City with a male-dominated General Assembly, particularly the House? I think I just mentioned a few minutes ago that in Missouri, just, 41 of 163 state reps are women. How's it been for you?
It's an adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
But probably one of my greatest mentors, and oddly enough, she's actually younger than I am, is Senator Curls.
Mm.
We've been good friends for a very long time. And so when things get a little tough, that's always somebody I can go to, and she's down there in Jeff City with me. But then there are also other legislators on the House side, both male and female, that have been extremely supportive.
Mm-hmm.
Minority Leader Mike Talboy has been great. You know, I went through a situation just before I went down to Jeff City, and I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Mm.
And actually, Mike was one of the first people that I called. They are very, he was incredibly supportive of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think mentors are not necessarily just going to be the women. They are going to be the men. There are some men as well who are very supportive of women and other women getting involved in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to find those mentors and rely on them.
You know, when you hear people say, you know, is Jefferson City, oh, it's just a good old boys club. Is it?
At times you feel that way.
Yeah.
There are definitely elements of it. But at the same time, I think we're starting to see that change mm-hmm. somewhat. There is a younger group coming through. I think that is making a difference. I think you probably see more of that on the Senate side than the House side because there are far fewer of them.
Mm-hmm.
Term limits also have an impact on that. You're not there very long.
Yeah.
And there's an upside to that and there's a downside to that.
Yeah. Let's go back to some phone calls here. And Al from the Plaza area. Al, good morning.
Good morning, guys. You know, you're talking about the possibility of a woman president.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, it's been occurring to me. Ancient cultures, as a rule, have a strong feminine model built into them through, you know, the passage of time and history. Middle America management, for the most part, is women-dominated. Women have, it appears to me, a more salient kind of intelligence that's based on practical considerations. Men, as a rule, are ideational, but women, in a sense, and I'm going to make a really weird statement here, tend to be more intelligent when it comes to practical matters. And as a result, they also tend to be more strategic. And I think male history has proven to be somewhat of a failure. And maybe it's time that we kind of look towards our women as a great resource rather than a burden. And Margaret Thatcher, incidentally, was the worst of what women are in terms of leadership. She actually expressed all of the dark side of the feminine power. But women in general are more intelligent on practical matters. So that's my contribution.
Al, thank you very much for the call. And I should point out that when you mentioned women being more intelligent when it comes to practical matters, our guests today were all nodding their heads vigorously and smiling. And I'm kidding. But what do you think about that, Gail?
I think part of that leads to what we do every day.
Mm-hmm.
Women raising children, dealing with schools and teachers and principals and dance and all the things that you deal with your children, you have to be very practical. You have to be a good negotiator. There are so many things in the natural everyday process that actually are the keys to being a good leader.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think we realize that we can translate that into something else.
Yeah. Just before we leave the air in just a couple minutes, do all three of you think you'll see a woman president in your lifetimes? Yes or no? Kathy?
Yes.
Yeah. Gail?
Yes.
Yeah. Julie?
Yes.
Yeah. A little hesitation there.
Yeah.
Lori posted this on Facebook. I am a woman, and quite frankly, I couldn't care less about whether or not a woman ever becomes president. I vote for the person, not the gender or race of a candidate. Leslie also responded to our Facebook post. Absolutely, she says. I can't wait for the U.S. to catch up to so many other nations in the world. And she's talking about a woman president in her lifetime. Melissa posted this on Facebook. On this day in 1919, Congress approved the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, guaranteeing citizens the right to vote regardless of their gender, and sent it to the states for ratification. Ratification wound up happening in August of 1920. You know, Julie Warren, we were talking a little bit ago about women not being as generous when it comes to writing checks to other women candidates, and yet there is a group out there, a very prominent Democratic group. It's known as Emily's List. They tend to support pro-choice Democratic women. Tell us what that group is.
Well, I'm not a member of Emily's List, mm-hmm. but I'll tell you what I know about it is that I do think that they tend toward Democratic, though I don't know that they identify themselves as Democratic, but they do support candidates that are pro-choice.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a fabulous political training program, and they are supportive and influential and have a very sophisticated program for identifying and supporting candidates.
And this is a multi-million-dollar campaign fund, so there is a sense here that some women out there are supporting other women in
right.
many cases.
And Emily is not named after a person. It stands for Early Money.
Oh, that's right.
Early money.
It makes something happen.
Yeast. I forget what it is
right.
now, but yeah.
Right. Not yeast infection, something
yeah.
else. Yeah, hopefully here. Yeah, yeah. Kathy, just real quickly here, there's also something in our politics, a gender gap that exists between women and men. Women more likely to support President Obama, men more likely to support Mitt Romney. At least the polls are showing that right now. Why is that?
You know, I really don't know.
It's an interesting phenomenon in our politics. Any thoughts on why that exists? Yeah.
No.
Okay. Well, we'll leave on that note. The polls do show it, and we'll watch the polls closely as we go forward. Hey, thank you all for a very good conversation here today. Enjoyed having you. Yeah. Our thanks to Dr. Julie Warm, Gail Beatty, and Kathy Dusenberry. You'll find details about our guests and more information about our show at kcur.org. Again, Madam President Camp runs for a week beginning on June 25th. Scholarships are available. For more information, call Dr. Julie Warm. That number again, 816-235-5371. On Tuesday, we talk with historian Douglas Brinkley about his new biography of Walter Cronkite. The show is produced by Steven Steigman. We had help today from Danny Alexander and Greta Wendelin. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.